thanks to our sponsor, ShareGate. Does managing cloud spending keep you awake at night? Trying to figure out how your budget is being spent is enough to give anyone goosebumps. Our friends at ShareGate understand that most cloud architects and developers want to create great applications, not count dollars and cents. That's why they built ShareGate Overcast, to help admins control Azure costs through transparency, collaboration, and simplicity. With anomaly detection, AI-powered cost forecasting, as well as personalized cost recommendations, and a unified Azure governance platform, you'll see results from the moment you connect Overcast to your tenant. To start a free trial of ShareGate Overcast so you can get back to building big ideas, visit ShareGate.com/overcast_CS. This is the Microsoft Cloud Show, episode 360. We're coming full circle. For today, CJ and I are going to do a preview on the Microsoft Build 2020 virtual conference, recorded live May the 15th, 2020. Thank you to our sponsor, Datadog, a SaaS cloud monitoring platform for cloud infrastructure and applications. Datadog integrates seamlessly with more than 400 technologies, including Microsoft Azure, Azure Service Bus, Cosmos DB, Azure VM, PagerDuty, Gremlin, and more. Start visualizing all of your Azure metrics in real time with out-of-the-box dashboards, alerting, application performance monitoring, and log management in one tightly integrated platform. Try Datadog free, and listeners of this podcast will also receive a free Datadog t-shirt. Visit datadog.com/Microsoft Cloud Show to get started. Back to the show. Mr. Johnson, how are you doing this morning?
I'm pretty good. How are you?
I'm full circle, man. We are episode 360.
I know. How about that? We've got some interesting episodes. We've got episode 360, obviously, which is today. But what happened? What are we going to do for episode 365?
It's gonna work every day of the year.
Except when it doesn't. Gotcha.
Well, that's 364.
Yeah, exactly. Episode 364. True. Yeah, no, I'm pretty good. Weirdly, I've got a digger in our backyard and I'm moving earth around, and it is, you know, for the first time in my life, I'm questioning my career. I'm like, was software development the right thing for me to do? This earth moving stuff is really fun. It's just like, it's so cathartic. It's like, I don't know, just scooping dirt and moving it and making little perfect little piles and patting it down on the top with a digger. And I know you're looking at me like, are you serious? But I was like, man, I wonder if I could make a career change to like earth moving, like, dude. And it's like playing with big toys.
It totally, I mean, it's when you were a little kid, and I remember watching the garbage truck go down the street and I wanted to be a garbage man because I thought the garbage truck was awesome. Now, I guess you could say in some sense on the projects I work on, I feel like that, but so a little bit of feedback here, okay? That was not a shot at any of my existing customers. I'm talking about back in my former lives. I got a question for you, and this may be a bit of feedback at the same time. So, are you doing this yourself, or is a contractor coming in and doing this?
There's a contractor who's coming in and doing most of it, and I'm helping out.
Okay, because, so for those of you who are not friends with CJ on Facebook, which this is not an open invitation to start, everyone start friending CJ on Facebook, or me, but I haven't been able to tell if you've been doing it, if you got this stuff, what you were doing, and I see these pictures, and so it's almost like, I feel like I'm watching this puzzle come together.
I see.
I ask a couple of questions. I'm like, are you bored? Or are you actually building something? Or are you bored, right? I left that as a comment one time. I'm like, what are you doing to your yard? Like, I thought your yard was huge. And then I see this big section gone. I'm like, wait a minute, that looks like a side yard.
Yeah, that's
so
a side yard.
It would be awesome to see, but just complete unsolicited feedback, because that's what type A people like to do, is just tell you how you should be doing things.
Sure.
Is like, if you have like a rendering of like, what are we trying to do? That would be cool to see.
Yeah, I don't have that.
Oh, okay. That's fine.
No, but
I can't figure it out.
Yeah, I've got it all. It's just in my head. But as things come together, I'll keep posting photos. But no, honestly, there is somebody who knows what they're doing, who's doing it. But I get to use the machinery and move earth around and stuff like that too to help out when I get some time. So that's been really fun. I highly recommend it. Go hire a bobcat and just start like gnarling up your backyard. It's really fun.
So, for those of you who are in the United States, he doesn't mean hiring a bobcat. He means renting a bobcat, which is a little...
Hiring.
You say hire. It sounds like you're going to go like getting a cat to come in your yard and start tearing through things.
Oh, really? Yeah, gotcha. I guess in New Zealand we call it hiring. Like, you go hire equipment.
Yeah.
Rent. You go rent.
Yeah.
Temporarily renting equipment. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's cool. Cool. Yeah, we're doing similar stuff in our backyard. Not similar, sorry. Actually, I got a funny little story about this too. Our 19th wedding anniversary was this past Tuesday. And our present to ourselves is to, I say remodel, but it's not really, we're not changing anything. We're just kind of like adding some stuff to make it more livable. We have a screened-in porch patio off the back of our house. And we're having somebody come and rip out all the screens and put higher gauge or smaller gauge screen, so like the tiny little bugs can't get through it. We're doing it at probably the worst time, because when they do it, it's when the yellow flies are going to be out. And so all these yellow flies are going to get trapped inside of our screen. Then we have to go kill all those, I'm sure. But we've had like added lights. We've added, changed out the contractor lights, added like kind of Christmas string lights going across the top, new furniture, all that kind of stuff. So it's
a refresh.
Yeah, it's like a refresh. Yeah, I sat out there last night. It's
feature
almost
pack
done.
Too.
Yeah. I sat out there last night with my iPad and was watching a show on Netflix. Just sat there the whole night with a glass of wine.
Nice.
And it was just like, oh, this is great. But nice. Yeah, the funny part of the story is earlier this week, so I'm going to preface this with I'm not passing judgment on anybody, but I'm one of the people in this whole pandemic thing where I'm on the more cautious side of, I'm not thinking, yes, everything's got to open up and fine, you want to open things up, but I'm not going to rush out and go out, you know, start being in public and stuff. I'm on the more cautious side of this whole thing. Again, that's not a passing judgment. But so there's a restaurant, it was our anniversary. And so my wife and I were like, you know what? The restaurants are open to like 25% capacity inside in Florida right now. We're in our phase one. Outdoor seating is available. And so we decided, you know, let's go do something for our anniversary. And so we chose a place that was a nicer restaurant. It was a Capital Grill, so it's an upscale steakhouse. Because we went there because we knew some people who had already been, and I felt comfortable with what they did. Hmm. So, I mean, we sat outside. Normally, they've got 10 tables in the outdoor patio. They only had 4 of them available, black tablecloths on all the ones that were not allowed to be used. So we're sitting in a corner. Hey, everything's cool. And all of a sudden, there's 3 other couples that are out there. And all of a sudden, I'm taking a sip of my cocktail. So I'm having a Manhattan. And I swallowed wrong. And you know, like when you're drinking like hard liquor and it kind of hits your throat a little bit and you kind of have this like, not like a tickle, but like a dry throat and you're trying to like cough it out a little bit?
Yeah, yeah.
I have never gotten more looks, completely justified, but from coughing. Everybody around when I'm in this coughing fit sitting outside. And Meredith's like, are you serious? I'm like, oh my God, I cannot believe this is happening right now. I'm looking around like, I'm totally fine.
You're that
I'm
guy.
Totally fine. I drank. I was like, oh my God, really? Of all times, I'm going to have a coffee fit right now.
Oh, classic. Did everybody leave?
They didn't leave. The waiter was on his way over to me and he like diverted to a different table and then walked away. I'm like, I'm sorry. I'm fine. If you want me to leave, I'll leave. I'm so sorry. I just did that. And he's like, you know, we're all a little on edge right now. And I'm like, yeah, me more than ever right now.
Yeah, sure.
So
what else has been going on? You launched some new content this week, I heard.
I did. I was pretty pumped about this. So I launched, it's embarrassing how long it's been since I've launched a new chapter for the course, but I'm redoubled my efforts and I'm trying to knock out the last 4 chapters before the end of June, which I'm on track to do that, hopefully a little bit sooner than that, but we'll see. This week, I launched one of my 2 DevOps chapters on my Mastering SharePoint Framework course. The first one is about CI/CD. And I originally was planning on doing this and covering just Azure pipelines or Azure DevOps multi-stage pipelines. But like we talked about on the show last week, I've spent more time with GitHub Actions. And so it dawned on me, I'm like, you know what? I should show people how to do this in GitHub Actions as well. And so I modified the plans for the chapter a couple of weeks ago and recorded it. And so now it's 3 main sections. Here's what DevOps is, and also in the context of, here's what DevOps is, here's what CI is in the context of DevOps, and then here's what, or CI/CD, and then here's what a SharePoint framework, how it fits in the whole story. Now, section 2, let's do it all with SharePoint framework, with GitHub Actions, and then let's do it all with Azure pipelines. And I published the content a little under 48 hours ago.
Yeah.
I am floored at how interested people are in GitHub Actions when you compare it to Azure pipelines. Mm. I'm floored. You can talk about it. You can hear people talk about it. But when you start to really see what people do, it's interesting. It's really interesting.
I wonder why. Like, you know, more people would be using Azure pipelines right now. And maybe that's the case. Maybe they're already looking at Azure. They already know about Azure pipelines, but they don't know about GitHub Actions. And they're like, maybe I should be using that instead.
I think there's some of that. I think that there's some that where people are familiar with Azure Pipelines and they're like, well, how do I do the same thing in GitHub Actions? Or I'm familiar with this in the context of SharePoint Framework. Let me go compare GitHub Actions and see how it differs from what I'm doing in Azure Pipelines. And there's some places where GitHub Actions is a little deficient when you compare it to Azure Pipelines, but it's nothing that would stop you from switching over. Maybe there's one feature that would stop you from going from Pipelines over to GitHub Actions, and that's the ability to do a manual approval before something continues. You can implement that. There was some cool stuff from the GitHub satellite conference where the guy showed a chat ops, going from like Microsoft Teams and doing chat ops with GitHub Actions and saying, okay, now go through and approve it. Or, you know, so I want to do it. I'm going to do a sample that does that, that'll submit like an adaptive card message to a channel and someone could just say approve or reject. When it approves, it'll go through and publish it all the way to production.
That's cool.
So yeah, it's interesting. But yeah, so that's out there. Next chapter I'm working on right now is the second part of the DevOps piece, and that's about monitoring. And so I'm showing how to use Azure App Insights and doing some stuff with App Insights that probably the PII people would probably be scared to see. So I'm trying to, here's how you can really track your users inside of SharePoint Framework Solutions. But it's like, okay, be careful about this. Make sure you check with your company. The GDPR guys are going to go apeshit.
Yeah, gotcha. Fair enough.
I did have one more thing I want to share with you because I've complained about it on the show. And I've had some people ask me about it on Twitter, so I'm going to mention it. You know, I've mentioned that Zoom, when they updated their client, we lost the ability to do virtual cameras.
I do vaguely remember that, yeah.
Okay, yeah. So we lost that, and everyone's like going, you really care that much about the snap cam? And like, no, that's not what it is. Virtual cameras is a way to do, like, if you do any kind of like live streaming or any kind of advanced stuff where you can, like, you want to be able to have modification of your video feed that comes out before it actually gets published.
Right.
There's a concept called virtual cameras, and it's like, it's a virtual camera and a virtual mic. So you can do it in Teams, and you used to be able to do it in Zoom, but when the Zoom macOS client, when they removed that security flaw they had that dealt with like VNC or UNC-based cameras, they inadvertently broke it.
I see.
So I finally heard back from their support this week, and they said, yep, we recognize that we did that. We are going to have another, I didn't know about this. They said that we are going to have a Zoom client update that's going to ship before the end of May. And it will be a forced update where everyone using Zoom will have to upgrade to this client.
Yeah.
And when we do that, it will include the fix. Until then, I roll back to the old secured, the previously unsecured version of Zoom.
I heard about that. Zoom 5.0, there's actually a blog post about it that we'll link to in the show notes as well. But this is, I think it's, the Zoom 5.0 is generally available already, so it might not be the same one.
It's not the same one. There will be another one.
Ah, okay. They've switched out their encryption stuff that they use, so now they use a different encryption algorithm than I think what people were complaining about their previous use of something else.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, you can go update to that now, but it sounds like there's more to it than that. Yeah.
Yeah, they're currently on, I think on Windows, they're on 5.0.2. On macOS, I think they're on 5.0.2. This issue that I'm complaining about only applies to the macOS client. The Windows client does not have a problem with it.
But
the support guy said it will definitely be fixed before they do the forced update by the end of May.
Yeah, I bet that affects people at live stream and stuff, because typically you want to, you know, you take your camera feed and you put it through some software and it does some other stuff. And then you want to expose that, I guess, as a virtual camera that Zoom can tap into and show the composited feed. And I guess that was what you were talking about being broken.
Yeah, I like to have my camera, when I'm doing a webinar, I like to do the webinar and then have boot go like full cam and then have my camera kind of be part of a title slide.
Yeah.
So you can see what's going on. And then when I'm presenting, I like my video to be picture in picture in the corner. And I know Zoom, you know, you do get both, but with the thing with Zoom is that it splits the camera off outside of the presentation, and that makes the recording a little bit hard to mess with. So I like to control all of that when it gets to Zoom. And so all I share is my video, and I use stuff locally to change what you see and stuff, which is, it's a little less kludgy. It's a little more smooth when you're doing stuff when you're doing a webinar. So
gotcha.
Hey, you want to talk jumping into some news?
Let's do it.
This episode is brought to you by Raygun. Raygun provides full stack error, crash, and performance monitoring for tech teams. Whether you're a software engineer looking to diagnose and resolve issues with greater speed and accuracy, a product manager drowning in bug reports, or you're just concerned you're losing customers due to poor quality online experiences, Raygun can provide you with the answers. Get full stack error and performance monitoring in one place. The next time that you're struggling to replicate errors and performance issues in your code base, think Raygun. Head over to raygun.com and get up and running within minutes and dramatically improve the online experience of your users. And now back to the show. Okay, so we got two things we're going to do today. We're going to do a little bit of news and we're going to do a little bit of a preview about Build. And then, of course, we'll do some picks. So let's dive into it. All right, CJ, first bit of news that I've got here. I thought that this was really interesting from Microsoft. Did you know that over 50% of all the VMs inside of Microsoft Azure are now Linux? Not just containers, VMs.
Yeah, that is a big number. I'm on the fence whether I'm surprised by that or not. I kind of am not anymore. They announced the 30% now were Linux, I don't know, 2 years ago, something like that. And so, was that 2 years ago? It's probably a couple of builds ago that Scott Guthrie said 30% of machines and of VMs now in Azure are Linux-based. I guess that's, the slow march is continuing, and it'll be interesting to see where it sort of settles down at. What's your guess?
What do you reckon it'll get to? I don't know. I pull a number out of the hat, but I have nothing to really to base it off of. So it's kind of like a bet on black. I'm not surprised by it as well. I found this bit of news interesting just thinking back, like when Ballmer called Linux, like, was it a cancer on the internet or something like that?
Yeah, cancer.
Was that what he said? He called it a cancer, right? Is that right?
Yeah, he was really referencing, everybody attributes it to Linux, but he was attributing it, I think, to the licensing model of, I can't remember which one now. You know, the one that if you use it, you got to contribute back and it sort of starts like wriggling its way through things. I think that's what he was talking about. But anyway, I get your point. Yeah.
Yeah. So I just found it interesting that it's amazing how far we've come. That's the only thing I found interesting about it.
Well, now Ballmer's laughing all the way to the bank, right? Because he's Microsoft's largest shareholder and he's obviously doing pretty well right now since he left. Let's put it that
He's doing better than he was when he was in control.
Oh, multiple times over. When he left, I think the stock price was at maybe $35. And now it's at 180. Crazy.
Amazing.
Huh? Yeah.
Yeah. What you got for us?
Sort of Microsoft news. It's not really Microsoft news, but do you remember a guy called Jay Allard who used to work at Microsoft?
He was Xbox guy, right?
Yeah. Well, amongst other things, yeah. But that's what he's probably most famous for. Like he was basically one of the founders of Xbox at Microsoft. And he surfaced back up in the news the other day. He's been gone for years and he's been doing a bunch of investing and all sorts of things by the looks of it. And he also has a startup in Portland, I believe, that has something to do with bicycle registration so that you could have this big network, this big database of bike registrations, because bikes being stolen is a real problem. And so this is sort of like it's kind of like the FBI's central database of bikes, right? It's like you go register your bike and then people who are buying them can check to see if it's somebody else's that's been stolen and all that sort of stuff. At least that's what I think. Anyway, he popped back up the other day and apparently he's joining a company that's building a new video game console targeted at families and sort of bringing the fun back to family and group gaming, which is fascinating because you'd think of all businesses in the world, building another console is not a good one right now, right behind building a new airline. And I say that because consoles are just notoriously hard, right? There's like, it's super, super hard to do hardware at scale like that. And anyway, but if there's anybody that could pull it off, it's this guy, right? I remember meeting him at Microsoft once and just, at the time, he just broke the mold, right? He was just this really interesting dude. But anyway, he's got a fascinating history. He was responsible for IIS in Windows, TCP/IP stack in Windows NT, I think it was. Like, he convinced Gates that the internet was going to be a thing.
He's the guy.
Yeah, and that he came back to Microsoft after seeing a whole bunch of stuff with Netscape and the internet and was like, man, we've got to get on this. This is going to be huge. and convinced Gates to start putting the protocols in Windows, a TCP/IP stack, to make it possible to participate in the internet and in broader networking. So he did that, and Xbox, and then also Courier, the project that ultimately led to him leaving Microsoft, because he didn't, I think, reading between the lines, is he didn't like Courier being cancelled and left the company for it.
Huh.
And now they're building a foldable Windows thing again. So he must be like,
you jerks. It.
Yeah. Well, no doubt, according to, you know, if Microsoft's history is anything to go by, they would have done it and it would have been too early, right? Because it was way before the iPad. So it probably would have been too early anyway. But yeah, it's sort of come full circle.
The console video game business is, you can only really have any kind of success with that unless you, like, I've got a ton of money and you're willing to lose a lot for a long time, because you're not only trying to build a two-sided marketplace, but you're also having to invest in building something that people have to buy just to enter into that two-sided marketplace.
Exactly.
I just finished listening to a series of episodes from the podcast by Wondery called Business Wars. It was about PlayStation versus Xbox. And it was, I mean, just going back and forth and then hearing what happened with the Red Ring of Death and all, just, man.
Microsoft lost billions of dollars on Xbox for years. I mean, I've told you the story about, you know, when they built the Commons at Microsoft campus, and there's like eight stories of car parking below ground, right? It's one of the largest below ground car parks in the Northern Hemisphere, apparently. And somebody went down during construction because Xbox were in the building above it, right above one of the parts of the car park. And somebody went down and on the pillars below ground as you exited the elevators, and you know where it says like the floor number, like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5? They spray painted -1 billion, -2 billion, -3 billion.
Oh my God. You hadn't told me that.
As a big middle finger to the Xbox team, who are basically losing the company like $8 or $10 billion or something like that.
Wow.
Anyway,
that's interesting.
Fascinating. Yeah.
Hey, you know what my favorite thing with favorite Microsoft pastime is?
When they rename features.
Yeah, guess what they're doing?
Renaming features?
Yes, from the department of moving the deck chairs around on the Titanic, Microsoft has a series of major name change updates coming to Microsoft 365, and it is all about the way things are being released. Even though we used to have things called targeted release and all that, now those are changing. We're going from and I have links to these things on the roadmap. I'll let everybody dig into each one of these because they are incredibly boring and I'm not going to try and give you all the details, but you've got things like, used to be called the insider build. It's now called the beta channel. It used to be called the monthly channel that was targeted. It's now called the current channel preview. And then there's monthly channel is now going to be current channel. There's a new channel that didn't exist before called the monthly enterprise channel. Then there's the semi-annual channel. Is going to the semi-annual enterprise channel. Like, oh my God, really? Some people should not be allowed to work from home because they're too damn bored picking up renaming stuff.
You're somewhat evil, a little bit evil, the margarine of evil. It sounds like that's crazy.
It's crazy. So I tell you what, I don't know. It's new names are coming yet again because apparently targeted wasn't good enough. Now targeted is going to preview, so whatever. Hey, I know I'm ranting about this. I thought we have some more interesting stuff to talk about what's happening the day that this show goes live. You want to move on to that?
Let's do that.
This episode is sponsored by Nintex. If you could score an extra hour or two back in your day, wouldn't you take it? Because our friends at Nintex want to give you a gift, the gift of time. Seriously, if you haven't checked out what Nintex has to offer lately, you should. The platform built on Azure has evolved a lot. In just the past few months, the Nintex team has added new process mapping capabilities and most recently a new e-sign capability called Nintex Sign, powered by Adobe Sign. Nintex also continues to revolutionize products that you know and trust, including Nintex Workflow and Forms. With the power of Nintex, it is faster and easier for you to configure, not code, giving you valuable time back every day to spend it how you want. Test drive the Nintex Process Cloud at Nintex.com. And we're back. Okay, CJ, today, the day that this podcast is coming out, at least as long as we don't have any delays shipping it, is the first day of the virtual Microsoft Build 2020 conference. It's all virtual, nothing in person. And we'll have a link to it in the show notes where you can go grab the You can go see where the sessions are. You can add them to your schedule, although it's kind of annoying, at least at the time of recording, when you go to add them to your schedule. If you want to add them to your calendar, you have to individually download each ICS file one by one and manually add it to your calendar, which basically nobody's going to do. So I was like, you guys should just remove that feature because that's just kind of exposing the fact that you don't have a add it all to my calendar button.
Yeah. That also means that once you download those, that's it. Like if the session changes, you don't get any updates, right? Whereas if you provided a feed, an iCal feed, then what is it? iCal feed?
ICS.
ICS is the file download, but iCal is the sort of the URL feed type thing that you can get. But yeah, you could update it. And so when your sessions move around, they move around in your calendar, which would be useful.
Yeah, actually useful, yeah. Yeah, it's annoying. But anyway, Build is coming up. And you and I have a couple little things that we wanted to preview. Now, again, we're recording this the Friday before Build. So there's some stuff that, you know, we know that's coming, but there's some stuff we haven't seen. So we're going to talk about it based on what we know. And we'll probably in the next episode, we will do a recap on what we did see and what they actually did ship.
Are we breaking NDA talking to each other about this?
No, because we're both under NDA.
Is that the way it works? Is it transitive like that?
No, both under NDA. It's under NDA.
No, I mean, we both are. Don't get me wrong. That's not what I mean. But are we allowed to talk to about it with each other? I mean, we're going to, so screw it, but yeah.
Well, yes, we are.
Okay.
So, it is. It's fine.
We're going to ship this after the embargo lifts, just so you know.
Yes. That's why the show is not coming out on Monday. It's coming out at a certain time on Tuesday, so we're not going to get in trouble.
Exactly.
So there's a bunch of stuff that's in this that you and I wanted to highlight different pieces to it. You've pulled some stuff out. I've pulled some stuff out.
Yeah. There is a lot of stuff being announced.
Yes.
And there's this thing... For those of you who are listening who are wondering, well, like, how do you know about this stuff? We're, like you mentioned, we're under NDA in a couple of different sort of programs. Like, we get treated a little bit like press in some regards. And they sent us this thing called the Book of News, which is there's so much stuff that comes out at Microsoft conferences these days in these announcements that they can't individually talk to each person about each of the individual announcements, right? And some are bigger than others and all of that. And there's a lot of stuff that come from different product teams that it's an announcement, but it's not really news, right? And so Frank Shaw and the rest of the comms team, they compile this thing called the Book of News, which is basically like the news Bible, right? It's just like this massive composite of stuff about Build that it's sort of like everybody references it. So that's what we've gone through. And we've gone through and we've picked out our most interesting things from that Book of News. Now, we don't know all of the detail because we haven't seen the demos of these things yet and we haven't heard them talking about them yet. And it's also worth noting that there's usually stuff they don't put in the Book of News as well that gets released on the day. So we'll be doing a follow-up to this show.
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah, so there's a couple things that I know that you and I, like you said, when we said it's the stuff that's interesting, that's in the eye of the beholder. So there is clearly some stuff in here that I've seen in the Book of News that I look at it like...
Really?
Yeah, I don't care about that part of it. But it's like, but we're still trying to go through and we're trying to highlight the big stuff. So here's the first one. I'll start with one. I found one that was interesting because it's kind of pertinent what we talked about last week a bit with GitHub code spaces. Did you know that that Visual Studio has code spaces? I didn't. They kind of, sort of. This was formerly called Visual Studio Online. Oh, okay, now I get it. So VSO. It enables developers to work remotely from anywhere with a fully configured cloud-hosted developer environment that can be created in just minutes. One of the cool things about this is that what they're doing is they're launching this in preview, just like GitHub is, and it's kind of like the GitHub. This is like the Visual... They both have these, right? They both have these code spaces. So one of them is from GitHub, it's a private preview that you have to kind of be allowed into. But at Build, they're launching more of a public preview. Oh, wait, sorry. Is that right? No, they're both in private preview. Okay, so you have to opt into both of these guys. And one of the things that they're doing that they're announcing at Build is that they're, as part of this change that they're doing, there's like newer pricing, a lower pricing for all the different instance types. If you want to be able to try this different stuff, there's a part that it will work with Visual Studio, the big you know, 30,000 gigabyte install version of Visual Studio. Then you've got the smaller version, Visual Studio Code. There's one that'll work with that as well. It's going to be interesting. I'm really curious to see this session on what they share here, because it looks like, I guess what's not clear to me is like, well, how is this different from what we did with GitHub? Or is GitHub kind of like the macro of saying, you don't even have to have a project to spin it up. You can just go straight to a repo and spin it up straight from the repo and do your work directly in the repo. It looks like that's what it is. Whereas what Visual Studio has is you would have the project already running inside of VS Code or in Visual Studio on your local machine, but without having to stand anything up, you can say, let me run it, and it will spin up a hosted container or VM for you. Don't know anything about pricing. Hopefully we'll find out about that at build.
Yeah, gotcha. Interesting to hear more about that. It's a little confusing, I guess. I've got to tune in and hear what they're planning there. Mm. So I have one on that I thought was pretty interesting around Cosmos DB. So obviously Cosmos DB seems to be keeping up its good work and getting traction, obviously, and is doing quite a lot. They're also adding auto-scale provisioned throughput for scalability and large-scale workloads. So check this out. They're now offering auto-scale provision throughput, which offers SLA-backed single-digit millisecond latency and 5 nines availability. So 99.999% availability guaranteed.
Did that come down to like 5 or 15 minutes downtime a year?
Yeah, it's something crazy, like per year, yeah.
Single-digit millisecond
latency and 5 nines availability guaranteed with a SLA-backed guarantee.
Man, that's epic. That's pretty
crazy,
impressive.
Huh? I mean, that's I just found it fascinating that you can get, like, Azure is getting to 5 nines, because there's a lot of services in Azure are 4 nines, or not even that, 3 nines, with 3 nines and five, right? 99.95% guaranteed. So getting to five is a big deal.
Yeah, that's a big deal. So I've got a little bit of stuff in the Microsoft 365 space. We have a few things here. The first one, I'm very curious to see the reaction to this when they announce it. Both of these are Microsoft Teams related things. So the first one, people have been asking about this for a while, and this is one that I think people are going to be happy to see, is Microsoft Teams templates. So now when you go to create a team or you provision a team, and it's, well, I'll create this team and it's going to be for a project. So now I need to go add a channel for this and a channel for that and install these apps and configure this and configure that. You'll be able to have a template and say, I want to create a team, use this. And so it'll go through, and it's almost like, for you SharePoint people, it's kind of like a site design script, or it's kind of like a template for a brand new site that you spin up. So that's going to be a welcome thing. The other thing, and there's other stuff that they're going to be announcing next week as well, like some improvements to the Teams infrastructure around NDI, which is like a network-based video stream, so that you could use Microsoft Teams in terms of live event. When you do these big conferences, you don't always have like HDMI cables running all over the place. You do it all over like a network.
Yeah.
And NDI is a technology to be able to do this. So they're adding that support to Teams live events. But the one that I'm interested to see what people's reaction is there's some new extensions that are being added to Visual Studio and Visual Studio Code. And these are, they're a little slim on the description of this. So the session is going to be interesting. But they talk about how you are in these new extensions available for these two editors, you'll be able to create a new Microsoft Teams app and be able to, from that extension, deploy it and publish it straight, or at least publish it and request approval straight to the Teams app store. Now, I've kind of seen an early demo of the one from the VS Code extension one. And the reason I'm giving you this, I'm saying, you know, I'm curious to see what people end up doing, what people's reaction is to this. The first time I saw this, the first time I heard about this, my reaction was, but hold on a minute. There's already something that we use for creating new projects for Microsoft Teams. And it's the Yeoman generator that was built by the community, specifically Victor Whelan. It was built by the community. It was then kind of, I guess, adopted is one way to look at it, by Microsoft and by the product group. And then the product group, they didn't really put too much effort into it. And so it's now kind of come back to the community. And now it's now owned by the Microsoft 365 Patterns and Practices group. When I say owned, I just mean that's its home. But the community has got a lot more energy going into it as well right now. So first thing I looked at was, why are you guys creating something brand new when nobody's, when they want to use VS Code, they're already using something else?
Yeah.
So I'm curious what they're going to show, what they're going to do.
It's kind of like VisiWiz.
It is. And this is an attitude that I really see this a lot from the Microsoft 365 group that's disappointing. And that's that too many engineering teams at Microsoft kind of have this attitude of, if we didn't build it, it doesn't exist.
Yeah.
And it's unfortunate because it would have been nice to see whatever they've done with this. I'm not passing judgment on it yet because we really haven't seen it until the session. But if there's anything unique with it, I'd like to see that stuff kind of added to the Yeoman generator. And frankly, we'll just see what they do, see if people like it, and like, okay, cool idea. We will imitate that exact same thing in the Yeoman generator and then kind of ask, or can we leverage it from the Yeoman generator? I don't know. But the thing that I don't like about it from the demo was that it was very much a file new project experience and VS Code. And the thing that I hate about, so that's my attitude. The thing I hate about this is that people, when you try to take an editor like VS Code that people like because it's lightweight, and it's lightweight because it's have a bunch of extra crap and wizards in it. Mm. And when you add the crap and wizards that we had in Visual Studio, hey, if that's what you want to do, go use Visual Studio. But if you don't want that, that's what VS Code's for. And you don't try and make VS Code what Visual Studio is. That's the part that gets under my skin.
Yeah. No, I totally get it. I guess we'll see what happens there. Stay tuned for more interesting info.
I hope it's interesting. Sorry.
No, that's fair. On the Kubernetes side of things, Azure Kubernetes Service now supports Windows Server containers and private clusters. So the Windows Server ones are the most interesting because if you've got code, for example, that needs the full .NET framework to run, then you'll be able to lift and shift and do that sort of stuff in Kubernetes, which I think would be kind of interesting. So Kubernetes now supporting Windows Server containers. For those of you who are .NET Framework developers who are wondering what all this Kubernetes K8 stuff is about, maybe now's a good time to go check that out.
Mm, that's cool.
Yeah, so that AKS are doing a good job at keeping the progress up and now doing Windows container support is going to certainly help their Azure fans.
They don't get too much news. I mean, they're always shipping something, but they don't seem to get a lot of news and like fanfare and stuff. But that's a really good, offering. So
yeah, for sure.
I've got something here from the back to the Office 365 space. And this is something called Fluid Workspaces and Components. And so if you paid attention to this at the Ignite conference back in Ignite 2019, this is a little confusing. So fluid is not fluent, ending with a T, because fluent is like Office UI Fabric, the design language, stuff like that. The fluid framework and components, these are the things that they demoed during a keynote at Ignite where it was like the live updating content. So you could think of it like just taking a widget, dropping it into an email. Mm-hmm. And when you open the email, the widget can be like dynamic and be pulling data live. So you're actually seeing something change in your email or in a document or in a Word or on a web page. And these components can be used across different clients. The news out of Build is that a public preview is going to be rolling out, quote, soon to Microsoft 365 Enterprise and Education subscribers who have target or release turned on. And the other big news that they're making with this is that the Fluid framework will be made open source, allowing developers and creators to use key infrastructure from the Fluid framework in their own applications. Now, that's interesting, but I wonder if they really mean open source, as in they're going to take contributions, or if they mean source open, which is, hey, here are the bits, and you can use them if you want to use them, but you can at least see what it is.
Who knows? That is interesting. That is a distinction that is often not the case, right? And it's not made where a lot of them will source open, not open source.
You know what? I'm sorry. Let me change what I just said, because they did say it will be available to the public. So, quote, it will be available to the public and open for any developer to provide feedback, issues, and pull requests.
Oh, there you go.
That's impressive. That's surprising. I would not have expected them to do that, but that's impressive.
I would just go back to the whole concept. I don't get it. I don't understand where the demand for this is from developers and what it would be used for by developers. But I have not seen the light yet.
That is exactly where I am on it as well. I'm not going to slam it or poo-poo it or talk negatively about it, but I will say that it hasn't clicked for me. And so I recognize that maybe there's something I don't get.
Yep. Yeah.
To me, especially in an email, emails to me, when you send it, that's it's been like an record. Immutable thing. Yeah. If that thing can change, I'm not so sure about that. So.
Yeah. It'll be interesting for like legal discovery if emails can start changing.
Yeah.
All right. Project Cortex private preview is expanding and they're adding developer APIs. So yeah, Cortex is, you know, I actually thought we would have it by now, but it's apparently now going to be generally available in early summer 2020, which, hold on, isn't that now? Aren't we early summer? No?
No, this is still spring.
Still spring? Okay.
Summer's in June. So they've, that, I mean, early summer.
So it's like 15 days away from June?
I would think so. I mean, to me, I would have said it would have been June. So,
okay.
But they say summer and they didn't say June. So
early is a little liberal, isn't it? Like,
Yeah.
So they say Project Cortex, which will be available in early summer 2020. We won't go into it in more detail, but I'm guessing they're expanding the private preview of this, which you'd think they'd better be doing it pretty quick if they're coming out in 15 days. And talking about developer APIs to go along with it. So I'm guessing we're going to have sessions that are currently embargoed, maybe. I don't know. I didn't see anything on this in the build sessions, but maybe we're going to hear about APIs then, I hope. I don't know.
You know, this was something that was really, it really was met with a lot of optimism and a lot of news back at the Ignite 2019 conference. And I went to an event at the beginning of the year in January out in Seattle. It was supposed to be for developers. And I walked away from the event. I was a little surprised that it wasn't further along than it was. So I'm really curious to see what they mean when they say APIs, because they weren't in a position to where they really were talking about it even months ago. And without really
you
know, going into too much stuff that I shouldn't share because I don't know. So it's not really fair to say anything. I'm curious what it means when they said there are, you know, they've said that at Build, there are new developer APIs and modeling capabilities, and the private preview is going to be expanded. So like, okay, I got lots of questions. Nobody's here to answer them.
Mm.
Hopefully we have some answers by the time the next show comes out.
Yeah, that would be good.
Yes.
What was going to be interesting though, is wasn't SharePoint conference supposed to be the exact same week as Build?
Yes, I just got my... Right as we were starting our recording today, I got my notification that my boarding pass was available to fly to the SharePoint conference tomorrow, which is what I was originally going to do on May the 16th, but there's no way in hell you'd catch me on a plane right now. So I had canceled that flight anyway.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
So I hope we hear more about this because it is still interesting to me, but man, you know, they're going to put some meat in the sandwich pretty soon for it to be useful and worthwhile.
The thing that I'm really curious to see when Project Cortex really hits the light of day is I'm most interested to see, I hope I'm wrong, but is this only a really big enterprise play? Is this only for the Fortune 100s, Fortune 300s, Fortune 500s? Because there is a lot of features that they've talked about in this, which would be very useful for a lot of people. And if it's not there out of the box, then I'm curious what these APIs are going to give us access to, what your licensing needs to be for this, because there's a heck of an ISV play on this thing for the small businesses.
Absolutely. Yeah. And if you talk to some people about Project Cortex, like nobody, the funny thing is everybody talks about it. Not many people know about it. And so if you say Project Cortex, like, oh God, it's going to solve world hunger. Like this thing, is, oh, it's going to feed the starving children in Africa. Like the thing could, like, it has grown to like this big amorphous like silver bullet, and I worry that they're going to launch a pea shooter, you know, like that it's not going to be live up to everybody's expectations.
I fear they talked about it too early. I feel last Ignite, I fear they talked about it way too early and they didn't have something to show for way too far in advance and way too far down the road. And I thought that they should have worked. I know they were working with some big customers at the time who were really impressed with it. But for the masses,
it is pretty cool. Like, don't get me wrong. If they manage to pull it off, awesome.
Yeah.
It's ambitious and there's a lot to it and it'll be pretty interesting. But yeah, I think you're probably right. Like, they're kind of going for I get the feeling like they're going for big enterprise and that it's going to be priced that way and all that stuff. So time will tell.
I'm expecting it to be E5 plus some sort of an extra license on top of that. And that's going to be expensive. Really going to price out the SMBs, which...
It'll be a death blow for a lot of businesses.
Well, no, I don't... I mean, if they bought it, yeah. But I think that they're... From what I've seen, yes, it makes sense that it should be a Fortune 100, Fortune 300, you know, a really big enterprise play, because there's a lot of really strong capabilities here. And I get that they're going to be really expensive to pull off. However, with and I get that they're also trying to move E5 licenses. So you got to have a way to be able to do that. So you give them a product, a reason to buy them. I get it. I just think that there's a lot of capabilities that they're going to surface here that they're talking about, that it's the way they're talking about them and to the communities that are hearing about it. There's a lot of SMBs like, this is going to be really cool. And they're only going to find out that it's too expensive and it's really not targeted for them.
Yeah. I think
having, if an ISV got into this and said, can we do the same thing? Which I think that they can. I don't think that there's too much that Microsoft is going to do that is not going to be achievable by an ISV to do this at a smaller market, aside from the fact that there won't be stuff out of the box to be able to do it, that they're going to have to build it, run it in their own tenants or whatever, and have a way to do the UX, which that's not a trivial thing. I mean, I say it like it's trivial, but that's not trivial. We'll see. So switching on to some really exciting news. I got some stuff about Yammer. I'm sorry. You can go off mute and start laughing now, CJ. So back in November of 2019.
You know me too well.
I'm surprised I have kept a straight face with this. Back in at Ignite 2019, back in November in Orlando, Microsoft announced a lot of new things coming for Yammer, like the ability to interact or engage in Yammer discussions directly from Outlook, either in Outlook, you know, browser, client, mobile, whatever. It went live back in March of 2020 in Outlook Web, and it is now going live in Outlook Desktop and mobile as well. The reason I'm joking about this, and you are as well, is that the one thing that I saw, they made this huge big push about, here's all these investments we've made with Yammer at the Ignite conference last year. And when I was in the hallways and I talked to people afterwards, a lot of them were just like, why? I mean, you've got Teams. Why would I invest in Yammer?
And this was just my whole thing. I just don't get it.
For years, we needed multiple to-do and task apps. So, I mean, maybe we need multiple ways to have a conversation. I don't know. I don't get it. And it just seems to me like it's trying to, you know, we're still trying to pump oxygen into the dying patient. So,
yeah, I think it's on death row, right? It's on.
And we just went dark.
You went pretty dark. I was trying to brush over that. Dark, really.
I didn't mean, I said that right when it came out. I was like, oh, I didn't mean to say that. And you bust out with death row. I was like,
I'll go darker. It's death row. So, but it's kind of like, you know, it's inevitable, right? It's coming. At some point, it's going to be put down, right? Yammer is not going to survive. I can't see it. And it's just like this excruciatingly long period of delays and like the governor intervening to push it out and all that sort of stuff, right? Like, eventually, I just can't see it. I'm just not a believer in that. And Teams is going to, you know, add the whatever small features are remaining that are differentiated between Teams and Yammer. Teams will add those, and then there's nothing. And yet Yammer are like, 'tis but a scratch, and they're doing like, you know, add-ins for Teams. And it's like, oh man, that's like that annoying young kid that just wants to hang out with the cool kids for a while, ends up being super annoying. It's kind of like that. I think
I won't want to take too much credit for this because I think I heard somebody else say this, but if I took Yammer and I just threw away the back end and I made all the hooks be Yammer being a UX for Teams, couldn't I get the exact same thing? And then to that respect, I'm like,
you wouldn't even do that work. Why do the work? You've already got a web front end. But I know what you mean.
To me, feature parity. But that's what I'm saying is that like the feature parity is there. So like, why do I have two things to solve the exact same thing?
There'll be people out there that like Yammer that are saying, No, they're totally different. One's this loop and one's that loop and one's got those other features and all that sort of stuff. And yeah, I get that. That's not my point. Like, there are other features. I get it. But the gap is narrowing. And
what is the differentiation?
Exactly. Why?
Why is the important part?
You're talking features are the what. Yeah. Features are what, but why is more important. But yeah, so I've actually used this thing in OWA, I think it was, Outlook Web Access, where you're able to like reply to discussions in Yammer from OWA. Mm-hmm. And it's actually quite a cool feature. Like, it's pretty nifty. But, you know, hey, and I get that there's lots of people that use Yammer still. I totally understand that. But to me, it's just like if a tree falls in the forest and nobody's there to see it, did it really fall?
It's a funny feature to me because I was always told that Yammer was going to kill email. And then I'm being told the same thing with Teams, but now I can actually interact with the conversation straight from Outlook, which is where my
email is. I'm actually, I threw something out on Twitter the other day a couple of weeks ago where I was like, when are we going to get email in Teams and just be done with Outlook, right? Like, because then we could just have one app to for all of our communications. Mm. But anyway, you're making a please don't do that face. And
no, I just...
Yeah. It's kind of like a drama playing out.
Somebody on Twitter yesterday was having, going back and forth on something, and they tried to reach out to me and send me a private message, but they couldn't ping me on Twitter. So for some reason, I followed them. They followed me. They couldn't send me a DM. So what'd they do? They went to Teams to find me on my guest account, and they sent me a message that way. And that's cool, but when you do that, you can also see my email address. So why don't you just send me an email instead of a private chat on Teams? It's like, this wasn't a secure conversation. We were talking about selling a monitor. I was like, why'd you use Teams for this? Why don't you just send me an email? I just wanted to sell you my monitor. And
I don't know. I had somebody on Twitter reply to me about my Teams and email comment saying, you should just get them to use Teams. And I'm like, what? What? I want to talk to somebody externally, and you're saying I should force them to use the communications tool that I use? How are you going to ask them to do that to begin with? Email.
With a straight face.
Anyway, we move on. 3.1.3 in the Book of News is titled, Developers with Verified Microsoft Partner Network Account Can Mark Apps with Publisher Verification.
What is this?
This is the ability... You know how you register apps in Azure AD and you get an app ID and a secret and blah, 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 right? And that's how you talk to Microsoft Graph, all that sort of stuff. How you log people into your applications, talk to Graph, all those sorts of things. Microsoft are adding a new sort of like Twitter verified tweeters, whatever it is, you know, verified people. You'll be able to go through a process to get to be a verified publisher from Microsoft, which means that you have to jump through a bunch of hoops to do this. But what it means is you get like a little blue tick, right? I think it's a little green tick in this case. Actually, I can't remember. Anyway, you get a little tick or a check or a star or whatever it is. And it basically says, when you're consenting to an application, is the person who says they're the publisher actually the publisher? So say it was Voitanos, right? You publish an app to let people log into your training material for whatever reason, and you use Office 365 to let them do that. When they consent as part of that, it would say, hey, this app is from Voitanos, and they would see a little check mark beside it from Microsoft saying this person has been verified, so they know it's actually Voitanos Inc. that is publishing that app. So that when you consent to it, you know that it's really the company that you're giving the consent to is who you're willing to give the consent to. And the reason this is, I'm calling this the anti-Cambridge Analytica feature, because if you think about it, people in Facebook consented to all these like, what are you thinking applications, and they gave them access to their Facebook data, and then Cambridge Analytica stole all their data and did stuff with it, right? And Microsoft's terrified of that happening with Microsoft Graph, right? If I created a fictitious application and got people to consent to it, and I could get access to the Graph stuff. And so this is kind of one of the hurdles they're putting in place so that people start trusting verified apps. And eventually, IT administrators will also have the ability to turn on to say, I only use apps that only let our users consent to apps that are from verified publishers.
Mm, like a whitelist.
Yes. Yeah. Or even not quite a whitelist, right? To start just a yes or no, like consent to publisher verified apps. But then eventually I could imagine it getting also to only from this publisher, only from that publisher, only from this other thing. And I imagine next step, I have no idea about this, but I imagine next step is somebody wants to use, I don't know, Adobe Creative Cloud and sign in with Office 365. That's the first thing that came into my head. But they'd be able to apply to their IT organization somehow to say, I want to consent to this, but you won't let me. Can you approve me to consent to it? And they'll have some sort of approval workflow or something, I'm guessing.
I think they're doing something like, well, app permissions are doing something like that where you can have, there's a request. Actually, this is in preview. I think this feature's in preview if we're talking about the same thing where I want a permission and I want to use an app, but the app needs to be granted permission. And so I can request somebody grant permission to this app as an application permission. That will go to the tenant admin or the global admin when they get this request, they say approve and it gets the permission and I get notified that the permission was granted. This was in preview.
Oh, I haven't heard of that.
At some point. I don't know. I haven't seen the UX for it. The UX is definitely in preview, but I'm not sure where this, what the state of this entire thing is, but gotcha. That is coming or has already come or something like that.
Okay.
I don't know.
I haven't seen that. But yeah, I went through this publisher verification stuff. I was in the preview program for it. And Hyperfish, our apps that we get users to consent to as part of onboarding, are publisher verified now. And so they get the little check. And it was pretty painless. You have to be part of the Microsoft Partner Network. And then there's some technical hurdles that you have to pass through. But it was relatively painless. The interesting part in all of this is your apps have to be registered in an Azure AD tenant, which has a verified domain name attached to it. So in our case, hyperfish.com, right? Mm. And that verified domain has to be the same domain that's registered and verified in your NPM Microsoft Partner Network account. So they can tie your NPM account together with your Azure AD account to say, oh yes, you're the same company. That's going to mess people up big time, because the only reason we were able to do that is because I screwed up really early in the Hyperfish, Hyperfish's history, and I registered our app IDs in our production Azure AD tenant for hyperfish.com, and I would never do that again.
I don't understand. Say that one more time.
So when I registered our application IDs for Hyperfish, we've got three or four of them. I registered them in our hyperfish.com Azure Active Directory, the same one that is for our Office 365 tenant and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I regret doing it to this day, because there's one thing you can't move around and migrate around in Azure, and it's app IDs. You can't register an app in one Azure AD tenant and move it to another later on. It's not possible.
Okay.
And so Hyperfish got bought and we needed to migrate stuff, including our Office 365 tenancy. We migrated Office 365s and we smushed it together. We wanted to smush it together effectively with Livetiles, right? So we could keep our addresses, we migrated our mail, all that. We migrated all of our mail, but to this day, we cannot move the hyperfish.com domain name from our Azure Active Directory tenant to the Livetiles Active Directory tenant because the app IDs are tied to it. And so we would have to, we can't move hyperfish.com from being registered in one Azure AD tenant to another because our app IDs are registered in that Azure AD tenant, and we'd have to delete them before we could move our domain name across tenants.
And that would break all the permissions that people had granted to those apps.
Well, you couldn't even move them. You'd have to delete them. You can't move it, so you have to delete it or recreate new app IDs in a new tenant and get all of your customers to completely reconsent to a brand new application.
Wow. Oh my God.
So best practice in my book, at least going forward, is create an Azure AD that is specifically got nothing to do with your business, like nothing to do with your Office 365 stuff, anything like that, is solely for the purpose of app registrations, and tie a different domain name to it. Like instead of hyperfish.com, I would have tied hyperfish.io to it, for example, and done it all that way. Because merging companies has enlightened me to how painful dealing with app registrations and domains are in Azure AD.
Wow. I had no idea.
Yeah.
I knew that once you get an app, a domain registered, and if you lost control over the account where the domain was registered, it's like an act of God of trying to use that domain again inside of Azure.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, so I tell people, like, when you create like a M365 dev tenant, don't ever register a custom domain, because if it ever expires, you're totally screwed with that domain.
Yeah, no, totally. So coming full circle, since this is episode 360, back to publisher verification. Currently, this is a problem, because if I followed my best practices, I would not be able to verify my apps using this new thing from Microsoft, because I would have registered my apps in a completely separate Azure AD, which doesn't have, in our case, hyperfish.com's verified domain attached to it. And so that's the linkage that's needed for this publisher verification. And I've given them this feedback, and they understand this problem is going to be a big problem, and they're working on a solution for it. But for now, my understanding is you have to have had registered your apps in the same Azure AD tenant with your verified domain that's the same as the domain in your MPN network registration. So you got to get the stars just to align just right. But their intent is good with this. I actually quite like it. But the implementation might be a bit tricky for some people. It wasn't because I screwed up years ago, fortunately. But yeah, anyway.
My goodness. Oh, man. Well, crazy, man.
More
crazy
detail stuff than you probably ever thought you wanted to know. And probably everybody at the other end is tuning out going, come on, move on.
No, it's one of those things, though, that you just kind of like, it's nice to know it's nice to know where the quicksand is. So I know that if I'm walking in that direction, I know there's quicksand over there and I need to be very careful if I'm going to go do something. So it's not that I followed what you were saying. I didn't follow it specifically, but hopefully like maybe our listeners are going to treat it the same way. Like, okay, if I'm going to register apps that I'm going to use for my company, maybe I don't want to use the exact same AD tenant that I use for the domain and email and M365 and all that stuff.
That's the exact same problem as having a live ID and a Microsoft account and an org ID, like Office 365 or Azure AD account tied to the same email address. Rest in peace. Like, it is such a nightmare.
I dealt with that for a very long time, and I'm still getting the effects of it. And now they swore to me, too. The funny part, they swore to me when I changed my MSA to an Outlook.com account and that I would not lose access to any of the apps. And there are two or three services that are still recognize. And I even asked them, I said, well, what happens if there's a service that kept track of my MSA by email and not by my actual account ID? And he goes, don't worry, it's all taken care of. Nope. There are two or three services, and one of them is a Microsoft service that I can never get back into and change my settings on it. And I'm still getting emails from them, but I have no control over it because I cannot log in to my MSA with my primary email address that I used to use as my MSA login. I can't log in because that whenever I log in with that email address, it takes me to my work and school account.
Yeah, gotcha.
I tell them this and they're going, but that can't be the case. Man. I'm like, you know what? I get that you say it can't happen. I'm looking at it. No, but it can't happen. I'm like, okay, you can stick your head in the sand. I'm looking at reality.
Slight detour. I ran the gauntlet with this about 3 days ago where I used to have, so I've got a domain, chrisjohnson.io. And I used Outlook Premium for that, right? So I attached it to Outlook Premium, which gives you the ability to use a vanity domain in Outlook.com. Mm-hmm. And so, but I attached it to my live.com account, right? So my live.com was always my primary Microsoft account. And I added a chrisjohnson.io domain to that mailbox. But I wanted to run the gauntlet and move to Office 365 for my chrisjohnson.io account. And I did it successfully. But I believe the reason why it worked is because chrisjohnson.io was never a live ID. It was just a vanity domain alias attached to a live ID. Mm-hmm. So I think I got away with it. Now I'm getting email in Office 365 for that domain name. And life is good, it seems.
Same. That's what I tried to do. It did not. My experience has not been as clean. I started with my primary email at andrewconnell.com, and that was hosted at some third party. And then I created an MSA account or a live ID as that same at andrewconnell.com. And then I migrated over to 365. And now I've got two sign-ins that whenever I signed in with whatever at andrewconnell.com, it's like, do you want your MSA or do you want your work and school account?
Work and personal, I think, I think the only reason I got away with it is because I'm pretty sure my chrisjohnson.io domain was never really considered a proper Microsoft account. It was just an alias on my main one. Anyway, should we move on?
We should. This podcast is brought to you by AvePoint. If you like the Microsoft Cloud Show, you'll love the Shift Happens podcast with MVP and regional director Dux Raymond Tsai. Each week, Dux talks with one of the industry's brightest stars about their most challenging modern workplace or digital transformation project. He uncovers the players, organizational hurdles, and last-minute surprises that inevitably rise when ambitious people try to impact their workspace. Season 1 features FedEx, Wells Fargo, Heathrow Airport, United Airlines, and other industry leaders. Go to avpoint.com/blog/shifthappens or search for the hashtag #shifthappens. That's one word, shift happens. Wherever you get your podcasts and subscribe today. AC's Voitanos delivers on-demand video-based training for developers on the latest SharePoint extensibility model from Microsoft in his course, Mastering the SharePoint Framework. Back to the show. CJ, do you have any picks for our listeners today?
I've got a doozy of a pick.
Ooh.
SpaceX shipped an online docking simulation thing, game, where you can use the same interface. They actually call it the actual interface used by the NASA astronauts to manually pilot the SpaceX Dragon 2 vehicle to the ISS and dock with it. And so you get to go practice your docking in a web browser. I nailed it.
Oh, yeah. I'm terrible.
Really?
Yeah, I got pretty frustrated with it pretty quick. It's very much the experience of, I had the experience of trying to dock, like I was using a laptop with a serious lag internet connection. And I'd be like, go over, thrust. And I'd take a few seconds and I start seeing the reaction and I'm like,
Oh my God.
And so I way overshoot it and then I overshoot it again. And it was kind of like watching that guy driving down the highway with a big trailer on his back, just doing the fishtail like.
Yeah. Like, and the turns are getting worse and worse. And you're just like, dude, back out of it. Back out.
Just hit the brakes. You need to stop. Just stop.
It's Don't try to fix it halfway through a paper cut. Yeah, you have a paper cut. You're halfway through it. And you're like, oh God, do I keep going or do I come back? You know, same sort of deal. No, it's really slow going, but if you take it real slow, I actually really enjoyed it. The first one was a little rocky, I've got to say. When I say I nailed it, I mean I've docked all the times I tried, but the first one was definitely some fishtailing involved. But it was kind of cool. I really liked it. I'm surprised, like the interface, but then you go look at the interface, the video of them using it, and you're like, hey, holy shit, it is actually the interface. Wow, that's cool.
Yeah, it is. It's pretty cool. It's a fun little thing.
Yeah. So go try docking with the ISS for those listeners. How about you? What do you got for us this week?
Completely unplanned. I actually bookmarked this back at the beginning of April. Completely unplanned. I'm sticking with the Elon Musk theme, except instead of SpaceX, I'm going over to Tesla, but not the cars. I'm going to the power side of Tesla. Remember years ago, maybe it was years ago, you and I talked about how in South Australia, they were having a problem with power and—
Yeah, they brownouts, had like they were having, yeah.
Very expensive too, and they'd have brownouts, and they have, you know, peak demands, and they would lose the power supply would fall down and or would go down. Well, Tesla got involved and they deployed in the middle of in July of 2018, they deployed 100 power walls with solar for a virtual power plant. And effectively what it would do is the article goes pretty darn detailed into it, but effectively what it does is that when the grid has a brownout or starts to kind of lose its supply, the batteries kick in and replace that. So there is no brownout.
Yep.
Now I will admit I'm having a hard time wrapping my brain around one part of this. And it doesn't help the fact that there are like loan mortgage advertisements in the middle of this article. But the virtual power plant has actually generated, the people who are involved in this have actually earned almost $250,000 for being involved in this. Now I'm not entirely sure I understand why that is, but only the first 4 months of this thing being in action, they've made $225,000 off of it. It's been going so successfully that they've actually bumped up the capacity of this thing where it was originally 1 megawatt that it was capable of working with. They've doubled it in November of last year, of 2019. They doubled it to 2 megawatts. I've read through this article multiple times. I need to go find the article that it actually references and go read the detail piece to it. But it's one of those things that you remember that video that you and I watched about how the ramjet engine on the SR-71 Blackbird,
yeah,
how it worked. And it was one of those videos that you watch it and you're like, all right, I feel like I'm a fairly like sharp person, but I watched the video like I need to go watch that like two more times.
I feel a bit stupid.
Yep. I know exactly what they just told me, but it's not sinking in. I need to go see that one or two more. Say that one more time. So this is kind of like one of those things, but it's really cool.
That's cool. Great to hear. Yeah, they've got some interesting graphs here about how it's flattening the curve.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's what this is. They even mentioned it too, its own flattening of the curve. And there's a whole like 20 slide deck that shows it's in use, but it's hard. I had a hard time. There's one slide. If you jump to slide 8, I think it is, it's got figure number 2 and it's showing the under delivery of power versus the actual response. And you see that since this has been deployed, how much of a change of under delivery of power has, it's almost completely disappeared. And if you look at it in November of 2019, you can see that it has completely disappeared. It's impressive. Useful.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
Very nice.
Cool deal, man.
All right. Well, I'm looking forward to some sessions at Build next week. I know you and I will probably be chatting in the background as a few of the live sessions happen, maybe the keynote and all that sort of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll reconvene then.
Sounds good to me, man. I will see you next week.
Catch ya.
Did you like this episode? Please tweet about it and drop a 5-star review in Apple Podcasts. It helps other people find out about our show and grow the audience, and we would really appreciate it. If you got a question for us, go to microsoftcloudshow.com/questions, where you can submit it as text or record it as a WAV or an MP3 and provide a link to it so that we can play your question on the show. You can also subscribe to us in Apple Podcasts, in the Google Play Store, Spotify, or your podcatcher of choice. And finally, sign up to our mailing list by heading over to our website, microsoftcloudshow.com. You'll get notices of each new episode as well as the show notes sent directly to you each week. We'll be back with another episode next week. Thanks for listening.